Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Good evening. This is Derek Fields of the Hardheads Network, giving a little podcast, sports podcast on some hard-hitting topics. Just a special edition here of the podcast on hard hits, and a little bit of an overnight edition because a lot of big stuff happened actually on the Wednesday night. So wanted to just go over some quick stuff that I had up on. So I'll just start off with a couple of different things. Number one, the NHL playoffs got underway. There were three games on night one. You had the Penguins absolutely embarrassing the Flyers, a game that was never competitive, 7-0. Yes, they put up a touchdown and extra point against the Flyers. They embarrassed the Flyers. It was really embarrassing for the Flyers, for a franchise that talks about, preaches passion and toughness. They show no emotion. They show no passion. It was disgusting. It was an embarrassing display. I did not pick the Flyers to win the series. I was nice. I was generous and gave them two games. But if they're going to play like that and just mail it in and leave their goalie out to dry, then that's going to be a relatively short series, and they'll be bucking their tee times by after three more games, or because they were just awful in every facet. And the Pens are two-time defending champions for a reason. They're going for a three-peat. They're going to turn it up. And Crosby was magnificent, a natural hat trick. Unbelievable. What can you say about him? His hand-eye coordination is amazing. His first goal was off a knuckle puck, and somehow he just batted it in like a baseball bat swing because he's got the best hand-eye coordination that I've ever seen. And the second goal was a tap-in on a broken play. And the third goal, of course, one of those just awesome Sidney Crosby redirects where he turns the stick and then he makes that half swing, and it just takes off and goes top shelf for the natural hat trick. He got the last three goals. Hagelin scored a goal. Brian Rust scored a goal. I think the most embarrassing one was Malkin. He came out of the penalty box when the Flyers were on a power play, and it was 2-0 at the time. And at that point, I think Murray had made a few good saves. That Murray did make a few good saves. But Malkin comes out of the penalty box, and it's 1-on-3. And I'm looking at it, and I could tell about when Malkin was skating, he was going for a goal. He skates in. He goes 1-on-3, goes around a couple of Flyers, and just skates right into a backhand, snaps the backhand past Brian Elliott, and it was just embarrassing. It was embarrassing. I mean, it was just awful. And I knew he was going to score. I didn't know if he was going to score it, but I knew what he was going to try to do. And when he pulled it off, I was just like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, and this was supposed to be a playoff game. It's game one. It's the battle of Pennsylvania. It's two bitter rivals. And the Flyers were so uncompetitive. It was just awful. They were nonchalant. They didn't do anything. I mean, they got humiliated. I mean, there was no pushback at all. It was not like you would expect. I mean, you got to at least do something. You got to push back somehow. But it was just all Penguins. It was embarrassing. And boy, that was brutal to watch. Now, the other two games were much better. You had the Winnipeg Jets with the awesome whiteout getting their first win, their first playoff win since the Thrashers, as the Thrashers of Winnipeg franchise. Thrashers had no success, of course. They got swept out by the New York Rangers way back in 2007. And they haven't been to the playoffs that many times, the new Winnipeg franchise, but they were able to get the W. Very good game against the Wild, actually. Devin Dubnyk played unbelievable for the Wild. He was just remarkable and made a lot of big saves. Winnipeg Jets were flying. They were fast. They had a 1-0 lead after two periods, but the Wild came out, and it came out pretty quick in the third period, getting two goals a couple of minutes apart, including a goal from Zach Parise. and they suddenly had a 2-1 lead. But after that, the way Winnipeg responded, they were one of the best teams for a reason, and they responded terrifically. I don't know if that's a word, but they responded very well. They got the next 15 shots, and Patrick Laine scored a just nasty goal off a drop from Stastny with that just wicked release. Tie glove, and Dubnyk didn't have a chance. He's got that kind of release. The other goal that Winnipeg had up to that point was Mark Scheifele on a power play setup, but that tied it at 2, hit the line angle. He still reminds me of Timo Salonen, the way he plays. He's just awesome to watch. He's magnificent. And then Winnipeg would get the game winner on a one-timer that actually took a deflection off a wild stick, I think, and it snuck through between Dubnyk's pads, and that was the winner. But I can't say enough good things about what I saw there. The crowd was amazing, and I don't think there's any better place to see a game, although a lot of people who are the Las Vegas Golden Knights fans would probably disagree with me, because, you want to talk about atmospheres. They had some atmosphere in Las Vegas. The Golden Knights have been amazing all year long, and in their first expansion year, and the 109 points, running away up the Pacific, all these things that they've done as a franchise, and then their first playoff game in Vegas at T-Mobile Arena, a packed place, and the crowd was electric, and you had Jeremy Roenick, the embassy analyst, ringing the bell, and you had the mascot, you had the whole show, and they just do it so differently there. And I'll be honest, I pick the Kings. I think the Kings, with their talent, especially when you have Kopitar and Jeff Carter up front, and you have Doughty on that back end with Muzzin and with Quick and Net, I pick them in 6 games. But they're going to have to be a lot better. And they're not going to be able to just they're just not going to be able to roll through this team. I mean, this Vegas team, they come out with speed, and they're relentless. And that's how they've played all year. They out-attempted the Kings by a lot in the game, and it was physical. And there was like 120 or 125 combined hits. So, these two teams, they don't like each other. It's a natural rivalry. The goaltending was excellent between Quick and Marc-Andre Fleury. The difference was Las Vegas got one goal. They got the goal, one goal that they needed in the first period, and scored by Shea Theodore very early, 3:23. And that was the only goal that was scored. If there is a difference, it might be the fact that Vegas, they come at you in 4 lines, they come out a few ways. Their fourth line was very effective. They were going after Doughty. Carrier in particular, just was delivering all sorts of hits. He had 10 hits. You had him finishing checks on Doughty. You had Marchessault, who's been big time all year for them, the ex-Panther, along with Riley Smith. Yeah, and they're a big part of that top line with William Karlsson. He just makes unbelievable passes. I mean, he didn't get a point in this game, but there was one pass that he made that I thought was a goal. Quick just slid over and made the great save. Quick credit. He made a lot of really good saves. He faced 28 shots, made 27 saves, but also Vegas missed the net quite a bit. They missed the net almost 20 times. So Vegas did miss some chances where they could have put the game away. But they gave the Kings absolutely nothing. Kopitar hardly had any room to do anything. They did have 2 great chances, the Kings. One was Dustin Brown in the second period. He had an open side, and he chipped it just over the top of the net. Oh, man. And this is a guy who had a bounce-back year, and he chips it just over the net, misses, after he just had a 4-goal game last week. And then you had Kopitar with a step, and he tried to outweight Fleury. Fleury played it well. One of the problems with the play is he tried to go to that backhand, but there was also a teammate in front of him, which didn't help. And he, by the time he took his backhand shot, it went a little bit wide and hit the side of the net. And Fleury's mask eventually came off, and that was the end of it. Jeff Carter was swarmed and did absolutely nothing. Kopitar did not have that big a game either. Kopitar is a Hart Trophy candidate. Doughty took his lumps, but he played over 28 minutes. So imagine a team. You're going to come against a team. They play all four of their lines. That's really huge. Gerard Gallant is not afraid to play his fourth line. His fourth line was excellent. When Carrier left the game from a Doughty absolute thump, a shoulder, it was shoulder to shoulder. It did catch a little bit of his head, so he had to do the concussion protocol. He left the game. Everybody just chips in on this team, and that's what makes them so dangerous, is that they all have speed. They all chip in, and they're very tough to play against. Yeah, their fourth line with Pierre Edward Bella there, along with Cody Aiken, who took some shifts in place of Carrier. He was actually pretty solid. So, yeah, that fourth line was a very effective line for this Golden Knights team. And that's the thing. If their fourth line is going to be so effective, you know, they don't really, it's not like they're going to score, but they played aggressive. They forechecked very well. And they really do a good job in terms of using their speed to back up opponents. It's almost like the Kings are facing themselves, except a faster version. I pick the Kings. I just think that their talent will win out. But if Vegas can play the way they let this play at, and they like to play at, you know, the series could very easily go to the Golden Knights. So that wouldn't surprise me at all. But they do take game one, and Fleury with the 30-save shutout. I didn't think he had to make a lot of great saves. I just think his defense, they just do a really good job. They don't have any studs. But Kyle Miller is an ex-King that was traded to the Boston Bruins in the original Martin Jones trade before Martin Jones got turned around to the Sharks, where he will play against the Ducks in what should be a great series. I think that's a 7-game series later tonight, Thursday evening, out in California, in Anaheim. But Colin Miller had a big year for them. Shea Theodore, who scored the goal at ex-Duck, he's a solid defenseman. They have him. Nate Schmidt, the ex-Cap, really good player. He's always been a really good checking defenseman and gets a lot of tough assignments. And he certainly played a really good game. And you also have, of course, Derek England. And Derek England doesn't back down from anybody. And he turned himself into a pretty solid defenseman. You know, James Neal finished the year didn't finish the year strong. Got off to that great start, but James Neal had a monster shift with a couple minutes left where he made a lot of really good plays, got the puck deep a couple times, took the body. So I would expect there to be more goal scoring. But remember, you do have two goalies that are excellent playoff goalies, very proven cup winners. But I don't think every game is going to be 1-0 the way it was. But there's certainly a lot of hitting out of there, and it was a lot of fun to watch. And kudos to the Vegas Golden Knights. Interestingly, John Merrill, remember the ex-Devil, nobody expected to be part of the defense. He actually was the sixth defenseman tonight. And Oscar Lindberg, who had played a lot of the year, he was a scratch. So was David Perron, so he must be hurt as well, because David Perron was one of the best scorers. Like, there's no way they would scratch him unless there was something wrong. Muzzin, by the way, was a scratch for the Kings, so there are some guys that are banged up. So just want to make pass down as well. The one negative I'd say with Winnipeg, with respect to Winnipeg, that you can't ice the puck as many times as they did. They iced the puck 7 times in the final 2:21, and they're lucky. You know, when you ice the puck that many times, you're tempting fate. But they did a real good job against the Wild, and they were able to shut them down, and they were able to get the win. So, but I definitely don't recommend them doing that again if they're protected. That's not the way you want to protect the lead. You do not want to ice the puck that many times. It's bad news usually. All right, so we're going to switch gears now. All right, actually, I'll make a couple predictions, just a couple predictions. You can check out my blog at newyorkpuck.com. I did do a full NHL playoff preview. I'm just going to give you my first round picks. All right, so we'll just do the West real quick. This is just the first round that I'm doing. I did have to stick with the Kings because I picked them, so I'll take them. I have them in 6 games, but I think they really need to get the next one. Ducks Sharks is probably the hardest, was one of the hardest series to call. It's a very good series there. Evander Kane's been pretty important for the Sharks. Along with Pavelski, of course, Couture, and they've got some good young talent there. LeBarek and Timo Meier. Brent Burns, of course, leads that blue line along with Vlasic and Marty Jones and Nett. The Ducks with Ricard Raquel finishing plays from Getzlaff. Andre Kasha has been very important for the Ducks. Corey Perry, more of a secondary role now. They are without Cam Fowler, but they do have this. They do have both John Gibson and Ryan Miller. Gibson's been a little bagged up, so I wouldn't be surprised if Miller is the guy. But I took the Ducks at 7. It's a pick-up series, really. I went Anaheim. I know they'll have a lot of success at home, but I'm taking them in 7 games to win. So that's one that can go either way. Now, 2 series, other Western series that start on Thursday. You have the top-seeded Nashville Predators. It's the home ice. An amazing year for them, obviously. Subban, Josie, Ekholm, Ryan Ellis. I mean, that defense is just unbelievable. Philip Forsberg, Arvidsson, Kyle Turris, Craig Smith. They've got a lot of guys that can put the puck in the net. They have gritty guys. They have young guys as well. And they have Pekka Rinne. They're taking on the Avalanche. The Avalanche have had a great year just to make the playoffs. You know, they won the play-in game. That was a great game in that final, that game 82. A great win for them against the Blues at home. Nathan McKinnon, who I think probably win the Hart, probably beat out the competition, including Taylor Hall and either Kopitar, or I don't know if it's going to be Kucherov or whoever it's going to be, but I think he's going to win the Hart. He's been a monster all year. He centers one of the best lines in hockey with Mikko Rantanen, a guy that was terrific, had 84 points himself. He really finishes plays around that, and especially on the power play, those two are lethal. And, of course, you got Gabriel Landeskog on the other side. I think the tough thing for the Avalanche, you know, they can't really match Nashville's defense. They're not going to be able to match the defense. They're not going to be able to match Nashville's offensive depth. They're not going to be able to match their goaltending. They have to rely on Jonathan Bernier, former King, former Ducks backup, former Leaf, and he's going to be the starter because Varlamov is out for the season. And they're going to need a lot of guys to step up, and they don't have any Eric Johnson right now, so I just think it's going to be too tough. I gave them a game. I was nice and gave them a game. But I think that Nashville is definitely the class. And keep an eye on Kevin Fiala for the Predators. He is really good. He really can make plays. He can really make things happen. And he's really a nice goal scorer. And he will be a future 30-plus goal scorer in the league. So he went up to 23 or 24 this year. And that's after he came off a serious injury. Now, the other series that we... that we, I think I've already talked about. I didn't really make a pick. Oh, that's right. I did give a pick. Winnipeg, Minnesota. I'm going Winnipeg. It's six. Too much talent, TMT. Too much talent there. I think Minnesota is going to play them tough, though. I mean, I'm not surprised that the game was tough tonight. Dubnyk's going to have to stand on his head, though. And he faced a lot more shots. When you go up against the Winnipeg Jets with their speed and their talent, and you start looking at the Blake Wheelers and the Mark Scheifele's and Patrick Laine with that crazy beard and Ehlers, they just have so much talent. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, especially if Dubnyk has to face 40 shots and has to face, and you know, that's going to be swarmed. It's going to be really tough, especially with the Wild without Ryan Suter, their anchor on the defense. Matt Dumba is excellent, though, to watch. Dumba and Brody are going to be two of the big cogs there on that defense, along with Jared Spurgeon. They do have some real good offensive players. You know, Eric Staal had a big year, 42 goals, matching Gabrick's record. Matt Cole, Mr. Playoff himself, scored a goal. Parisi has been hot coming in. He scored a goal. Those were their two goals. But they're going to need a big series out of Eric Staal, obviously, and Jason Zucker. They're a big part of that top line. Needle Niederreiter, another important guy, as well as a couple other guys, including Michael Gramlin. So, but what they're going up against is really, really tough. Bufflin, of course, he's not the best defensively, but he can really bring it for the blue line. Joe Morrow got the game winner on a shot that got deflected in by a Wild stick. Tyler Myers had a bounce back here. This is a team that can really swarm you to death, and they're well schooled defensively. I thought Paul Maurice would be the first coach fired. Boy, I was wrong about that. But they're healthy, they're fast, they're tough. There's not a lot of flaws with the Winnipeg Jets. You know, this season has a chance to be special for them. It's a shame that they're in the same division as the Predators, when those two teams have the best two records. And that's one of those things I don't like about the divisional format. You know, they shouldn't have to face each other in the second round if that's what it comes to be. But so I'm going Nashville in five. I'm going Winnipeg at six over the Wild. I'm going with the Ducks in seven over the Sharks in a pick 'em. And I'm also taking the Kings in six over the Golden Knights, although they're going to have to play a lot better. They're going to have to raise their level up. The Eastern Conference, there was only one matchup that got underway. That was the Penguins kicking the absolute crap out of their Pennsylvania rival, the Flyers, but they didn't bother to show off. And that was really embarrassing. I originally took the Pens in five, and it was nice and decided to give the Flyers two games. But if the Flyers are going to play like that and nail it in, they'll be done in four. They'll be on the golf course by next weekend. Now, the other three matchups. Let's do Devils-Lightning. Devils-Lightning, it almost looks sort of like the Avalanche of the East. Taylor Hall, obviously, the big heart candidate. And that could be, it's probably him against McKenna for the award. Hall with the 93 points and 39 goals. With, I think, 41 more points than Nico Hischier, who was the second point getter on the Devils. They have dynamic chemistry, Hall and Hischier, along with Kyle Palmieri, the Jersey Rocket. That's their top line. They're going to need a lot of contributions, though, throughout their lineup. And maybe a guy like Pavel Zacha will step up. Guys like Brian Gibbets, Jaromir Sajak, obviously a proven guy that likes to go up against the top line. I'm sure he'll see a lot of that dynamic top line that the Lightning have with Stamkos, Kucherov, and JT Miller, who, well, of course, that's Tampa, basically Tampa Rangers South there, with JT Miller and Ryan McDonough and Ryan Callahan, who's back healthy, and Anton Strawman. It really is insane how many ex-Rangers there are on that roster. But you start looking at the Lightning, what they have there. Braden Point was a 30-plus goal scorer. He's just lethal. On breakaways, he's really good to stop him. You got to worry about Tyler Johnson, who usually steps up to his game in the playoffs. Andre Palat, You know, he didn't score as much in the regular season, but he's always a guy who has great speed and can transition kind of like a Carl Hagelin, and he's real good shorthanded. So you have to worry about him. And then there's Anthony Cirelli, this rookie who now has a role on the third line. They just have great speed and great offensive ability, and they can really kill you. And they can kill you in transition. The Devils want to just keep gliding off the power play, as John Holland said. They can keep them off the power play. They'll have a chance to play them at 5-on-5. And whether it's Zajac or it's Brian Boyle or it's Blake Coleman or Boyle, Coleman, and I'm forgetting one of the guys, Stephen Mason. Use their checking players. And that's what they have, a lot of good proven playoff guys. Grabner will be important in the series. I know he didn't do well with the Devils, but he's one of those guys, you know, with his speed, his defensive acumen, his ability to play 5-on-5 and penalty kill. Maybe this is the kind of series he could shine, because the Lightning aren't that great defensively, and they will turn over the puck. So that's a guy that I think could actually be a key player in this series. Obviously, the Devils need it from their top line, but they're going to need it from other sources as well. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be real tough. Patrick will be one of the gritty guys. Miles Wood. Those two guys need to be a pain in the ass in front of Andre Vasilevsky, because Vasilevsky had a great year and he makes big saves. So they have to be pests, and they have to try to slow down the Lightning. But the Devils do whatever. The Devils won all three games during the season series. I don't think that means anything, but you know, they got a little bit of that psychological edge. Maybe they could use that to their advantage. Obviously, Andy Green and Vatanen and Sammy Vatanen will be a big matchup for the Devils. Will Butcher, very important defenseman in terms of the offense, what he was able to do as a rookie at the 44 points, and the power play, certainly. And, you know, a guy like Ben Lovejoy, who certainly brings experience. Mirko Mueller, who got back a job with David Severson struggling. They're going to need everybody to step up, especially against this Lightning team. Victor Hedman, McDonough, they're scary. I mean, Sergachev, this is a scary team. Strahlman, they're very scary. I mean, up front, what they have on the back end in terms of just a transition, I don't think it goes without saying that Keith Kincaid was unbelievable the last 2 months. You know, certainly just dominant the last 2 months with close to a 930 save percentage, and the way he played down the stretch with Corey Schneider, just not the same player since his injury and having not won a game in 2018. He's going to have to be, he might have to be the, I guess Hall probably have to be the best player, but he may probably have to be the second best player for the Devils to have a chance, because he could probably have to steal some games. He's made the big saves in games, but it's different when it's a series. I got the Lightning winning the series in 6. I think that their depth, I think they'll win out. They'll probably wear them down and win 6 games. But I'm sure the Devils will be competitive. They're not going to just mail it in like the Flyers did last night. Other matchup, I took the Penguins in 6 over the Flyers. I probably should have stayed with 5. You have the Blue Jackets and the Capitals also getting underway on Thursday, along with the Devils and Lightning. This is a good matchup. Most people are picking the Caps, but I just got a feeling about the Blue Jackets this time. Call it a hunch, call it whatever you will. I don't like the Caps goaltending. Holtby's not even starting a series. It's Grubauer. Grubauer is a good, has proven to be a really good goalie. But to him early, that goalie situation could become a problem, could be a nightmare for Barry Trotz. The Caps defensively, they're not great. I mean, they have Orpik, he's tough, but, you know, he could be exposed. Carlson's an offensive defenseman, not the best defensively. The best defenseman they have is Dmitry Orlov, and he'll see a lot of matchup time, probably against the top Blue Jackets line. Dubois is centering that top line. I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois is a really good player. He scored over 20 goals. Nobody talks about him, but he's really important to that team. And Tortorella is the coach there, and Tortorella did a great job with Dubois. Panarin, obviously, is just huge. Panarin was terrific for the Blue Jackets, and I would expect him to be pretty tough, obviously. It's an interesting matchup. Jackets is coming in pretty hot. Vanek has been a huge pickup for the Blue Jackets, and Ian Cole has been a blessing on the blue line. The ex-Pen obviously has some championship experience. And I really think Werenski and Seth Jones are the best defensemen in the series. And that's a problem. That could be a problem for the Caps. Orlov is their best defenseman, Carlson second. I think Seth Jones is the best defenseman in the series, and Werenski a very close second. So, you know, guys like Boot Jenner, who are gritty, Foligno, another gritty guy. I think Joaquin Anderson is another guy to keep an eye on for the Blue Jackets. They might be able to pull this upset. But I know Bobrovsky historically doesn't have a good repertoire in the playoffs, but I think maybe this is the series that he gets and steals. And he'll have to steal it because, you know, what he's going up against with Ovechkin, with Backstrom, Kuznetsov, TJ Oshie, even though he had a down regular season, but he certainly is pretty tough on the power play. Obviously, you don't want to give the Caps too many looks on the power play because they have weapons. You have Ovechkin. You have to worry about him and his one time. You got to worry about Backstrom behind that. You got to worry about Oshie in front. They have a lot of really good players. And then, of course, Carlson with the one-timer from the point. So, yeah, they obviously are going to have to be disciplined and stay out of the box. Underrated players, well, Lars Eller would be one for the Caps. He's been excellent all year. He's been a huge secondary scorer for them. Star players, Kuznetsov. He is such a sick talent, obviously. But the talent is there for the Caps. I'm just not sold on them. I'm not as sold on them as everybody else is. And I'm taking the Blue Jackets to pull the upset. I'm picking them to win this in six games. And if they do, they would actually beat the Pens in the second round. They've never beat the Pens. So I'm picking the Blue Jackets to break through and win their first series. The other matchup is the best matchup. I think it's the best matchup, at least. Toronto, the Maple Leafs, the Boston Bruins. This is the one team the Bruins do not want to see. The Maple Leafs won the season series. They can score goals with the best of them. They are run and gun. They have unbelievable speed and skill. This will take everything for the Bruins just to win this matchup. I think it's definitely a seven-game series. Yeah, it hits what I think is the best line in hockey at 5-5, obviously, with Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, the Rat. But I like the Rat. I mean, he's really tough. And, of course, David Pastrnak, who is on the verge of superstardom. He scored like 35 goals. That line is very tough. But then you look at what the Maple Leafs have, and you got Austin Matthews healthy finally coming in. You have William Nylander, Zach Hyman. And then, of course, you got the red-hot Mitch Marner on another line. You got James Van Riemsdyk. There is so much just speed, skill on these two teams. The Bruins are a little more gritty. You know, they have guys like David Krejci, who has been healthy and has been playing very well. Ryan Donato has jumped right in from college and from the Olympics and has been very good. And he has some skill, and he's playing second line. You have David Backes, who always goes to the front of that and gets those dirty goals and just makes the plays that win games. Maybe one of the question marks is Rick Nash for this team. He hasn't been healthy coming in. We'll see whether or not he dresses. You know, they gave up a lot to get him when they acquired him from the New York Rangers, and he could be an important player in this series. I mean, he certainly got the speed. He's a good three zone player. He's never been a big playoff performer. You know, maybe this could be the series that he provides the difference in, but it just depends on how healthy he is as well. Bruins have some other young talent there hiding, and it would be another guy to keep an eye on. They have a lot of good depth on that team, and so you have to really realize what they've got there. It's very impressive in terms of the talent that they have. They're physical, they have skill, speed, they can bounce it in the corners. They're going to try to wear down the Maple Leafs. So if they want to be successful, obviously, then they want to obviously try to wear down their defense, which is not great. Jake Gardner being one of the guys on the back end. So and the goaltending matchup is a good one. Tuukka Rask, a proven veteran winner against Frederik Andersen. Of course, he used to be the goalie for the Ducks. And it's a pretty good year. And he's made the big saves for the Leafs. And there's a reason why the Leafs and Bruins were so close during the regular season. I keep looking at Zdeno Chara and Charlie McAvoy. And those two defensemen, that pair, that tandem, that could be the difference in the series, in my opinion. And McAvoy is a big-time talent. Chara, he just knows how to play in these kind of situations. And that's why I'm picking the Bruins. I think they're just a little grittier, a little tougher. And I'm taking them. Would it surprise me if Toronto won? They can certainly pull it off. They can pull it off. But I'm going Bruins. And so those are my picks. So Bruins 7 to face the Lightning and a riveting second round matchup. Lightning, I'm taking it 6 over the Jersey Devils. Penguins in 6 over the Flyers, although I think it might be 5 after what I saw last night. And the Blue Jackets to pull the upset over the Washington Capitals in 6. And that would be your semifinals. And in the West, I've got the Predators 5 games over the Avalanche, who I think are the best team. I have the Winnipeg Jets in 6 games over the Wild. And I also have, so that would be an unbelievable second round matchup if it comes down in that central divisional final, that will be divisional final. And on the Pacific side, I've got the Kings eliminating the Las Vegas Golden Knights in 6 games. And I also have the Ducks going past the Sharks in 7 games. And then you would have Kings versus Ducks. So those are the picks. If you want to see more, just go to NewYorkPuck.com. That's www.newyorkpuck.com. And you can check out my preview. And if you go to NewYorkPuck.com and you're a Devil fan, be sure to check out Hassan's Devils playoff preview, a synopsis as well, about what he thinks could happen and his positive outlook. They do have a chance in that series, but obviously they want to try to keep the scoring a little bit down. If you don't want to get into shootouts against the Lightning, that's not going to be a winning formula for them. So we'll see what happens there. Couple other things on this podcast that I'm just going to get to. It's going to address a couple of things. One. Jeff Hornacek was fired by the New York Knicks. But it had to happen. They dismissed him right after the game. So it's very, very ironic because, I mean, the Rangers did the same thing to Elaine Vigo, except Elaine Vigo, at least Elaine Vigo had coached 5 years, and he had success as the Rangers coach. Certainly with the 4 postseasons, the 2 conference finals, the Stanley Cup final, getting back to back. but everybody knew that they wanted to go in a different direction. The Knicks, Hornacek just never seemed to really be the perfect fit. He made some odd coaching choices. He didn't always play the young players the way he should have. Nikolia, you know, was sitting a lot. Sometimes Trey Burke was in and out of Trey Burke. Looks like he should definitely be a starter on this team. And then they made that trade as well, which I'm still not sure about with Moutier. So it's not a trade that I was fond of. So I don't know. But Jeff Hornacek only lasted 2 years. I understand Porzingis was out. And, of course, the Knicks would win their final game against the Cavaliers, who had nothing to play for. Of course they would. But, you know, the Cavs wanted to play the Pacers in the first round. And the Knicks wound up winning two out of the last three games. Look, I've said it before, I don't like tanks. But I mean, in terms of Hornacek, they didn't make the playoffs. They didn't show a lot of improvement. And it just seemed like it was confusing. So, I mean, Hornacek goes. Now, what the Knicks decide to do next, I don't know. They're a jinxed franchise. I mean, Adrian Wojnarowski broke it along with Mark Berman for the New York Post. And so Hornacek finishes out two seasons. They were 29-53 this year. So I think they had come to the decision a while ago, so it doesn't really surprise me. So his tenure with the Knicks was 60-104. He with the Suns, when he coached the Suns, he was 101-112. And, you know, you have to really question the Knicks. You know, what is the thinking, you know, in terms of the philosophy? You know, they had Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson just wasn't a good fit, you know, but he did draft Porzingis. Porzingis had the terrible injury, obviously. You know, we don't know when he'll be back from the MCL, ACL. Obviously, it's a very tough rehab. So I don't know how much impact it's going to have for the Knicks for the 2018-19 season. There's a lot of question marks. The one good coach that they've had in all this time was Mike Woodson. You know, Woodson made the playoffs. The Knicks won a series under Woodson. They won 54 games when they had Carmelo Anthony playing at an MVP level. And what did they do? What did Phil Jackson do the next year? When he finally got there, he dismissed Woodson. So Woodson left, and Woody is an assistant coach now on one of the other teams that's successful. And so I don't know what direction the Knicks are going to go. I have no clue. I don't have a clue of what they would want in a coach. I don't know. I do think they should probably go with somebody that's on the younger side, whether it's a top assistant or it's maybe even if there is a guy in college that can move up to the next level, maybe they should consider that. I don't know. I have no, you know, usually I have a good idea on what I think they should do. I don't know. Woodson, by the way, is an assistant with the Clippers, so they just missed the playoffs, but they played hard under Doc Rivers and Woodson, and without Chris Paul, forced his way off the team to go join the Rockets, which I'm not too happy about. Obviously, I don't like that. And the Blake Griffin trade, and they did a good job. So, I mean, what's a good coach for the Knicks? He hasn't had a lot of jobs. He coached the Hawks and he coached the Knicks. What the Knicks could reconsider, maybe bring him back, probably not. I just want to understand what the goal is. Is this a team that wants to make the playoffs? Do they even have that going by? You know, what's the deal with Porzingis? What are they going to do with Trey Burke? What are they doing with the point guard situation? Frank Ntilikina and Trey Burke, and with the guy they got from the Nuggets on the management floor. I don't know. I've got questions in terms of the roster. You know, they have some guys that are up for free agency. So there are question marks there. I mean, it's really hard to understand what they're going to actually do with their roster. Ennis obviously Cantor was a really good player for them this year. And the question is, you know, does he want to opt with the free agency, or does he want to come back? Does he want to come back and be a Nick? You know, he posted career best, and he did a great job. So I like to see Cantor back. I sort of like him. I like his no-nonsense approach. He's not here to be friends with guys off the court, you know, or on the other side. And I respect that. I like that. The guy rebounds, the guy's a double-double machine. You know, he does come back, healthy character. What about Beasley? I think they should probably consider re-signing him. I mean, like, I understand he's very limited, you know, because he could be a little up and down at times, sometimes space out, but well, the offense that he brings is very nice to have. You bring him back in a six-man role, I think that's pretty good. That'd be a good way to go. So, you know, I'm looking at the box score of the final next year of the Hornacek era, and Beasley had 12 points. Max Thomas is a free agent, local kid from Brooklyn, New York. Look, he never is going to put up, you know, big stats. He's not that kind of guy, but he certainly plays hard defensively. He's gritty and he rebounds. You know, the Knicks want to bring back a guy like that. Kyle Quinn's probably going to leave. I expect him to leave. He had a nice year. Damian Dotson got some play time down the stretch. He certainly could shoot the shot, the jumper. He likes to shoot three. So, you know, I like to see more from him. Lou Cornette certainly played well down the stretch, too. He looks like he might be a rotation guy. Isaiah Hicks, I don't know enough about. Hardaway Jr. was hurt down the stretch. Now, this Knicks team, they still have some good players on this roster. So there are some legit questions about, you know, what I guess my question to management is, what would be the goal? What is the goal exactly? And I'm looking at the Cavs box score, and it's embarrassing. It's so obvious, you know, of course you want to rest LeBron. He only played 10 minutes and got 10 points in 10 minutes of playing time, so just so he could play 82 games for the first time in his career. I think it's kind of sad because, you know, Jordan played 82 9 times in his career, but that's, you know, obviously not something that happens as much anymore, you know, because these teams always resting guys. LeBron played all 82. I think he should win MVP. I think it's nuts how they just kiss Harden's ass. So that's how I feel about it. The Sixers, well, their 16th straight game, they're looking really strong. They are looking very strong right now. They're going to play the Heat in the first round. Who had the worst record? Let's see. And the one game that was playing, Wolves in overtime. Huge performance out of Jimmy Butler, 7 of 32 or 33 in the overtime, able to get into the playoffs. So congratulations to the Wolves on making it. Been 13 years, 14 years actually. 2004 was the last time they won the playoffs with KG, with Sprewell, with Sam Cassell. So 112-106 over the Nuggets. Jokic had a great game for the Nuggets, but Taj Gibson made some great defensive plays. He made a couple of big plays. Made the play of the game when the Nuggets had a chance to win it at the end. I did like the play because Jokic was in the corner and nowhere to really go. It would have been a very bad shot anyway. Taj Gibson took the ball away. He played very well. It shut him down in the overtime. 35 points. It didn't matter. But the Wolves, I think, were a better team. Obviously, with Towns having a big game with the 26, Jimmy Butler 31. And his turkey back. Teague had a big teardrop on a nice pass from Wiggins. And Wiggins gets a lot of criticism, but he only took 9 shots in this game, made 3 threes, and had a big extra pass there. Teague for what turned out to be the go ahead game winning bucket there. So, a couple of things just to pass around. We could do some NBA playoffs on a real show, JPG back. So, this is a podcast. That's going to do it, for at least for the NBA portion. Just going to finish out a little, just some thoughts on the brawl that happened up in Fenway Park. Yeah, he's obviously not off to the best start. It was a game they needed to win. They've really been struggling. There's no doubt about it. They have not played like a team. They haven't played like a team that looks like a contender, but it's early. It's very early. It's tough. It's a tough adjustment. Aaron Boone's been overusing guys out of the bullpen. Seve just didn't have it against Boston. At Fenway, at the first game of the series, Boston had 1-9 in a row. But they did what they always do against David Price. They let him up like a Christmas tree, and there was something wrong with Price, and he came out of the game for precautionary reasons. So something with his left hand or something. I don't know. Who knows? I mean, geez, probably just made an excuse to get out of the game. Gary Sanchez came to life finally. He had 2 home runs, a 2-run shot to make it 4-0. Stanton had 3 hits after having finally snapping out of his whole strikeout problem that he's had. He had 2 hits to finish up that embarrassing blowout loss on Tuesday. Game where Judge had 3 more hits and a home run, but Red Sox just romped. But Stanton had 3 more hits tonight, RBI triple, knocked in 3 runs. So Giancarlo finally started to hit, which is good. Judge continues to hit and get on base, and Sanchez hit 2 home runs. And the first home run was kind of funny because you have JD Martinez in left field, and obviously. Yeah, he's still getting used to surroundings with the Green Monster. And when Sanchez hit the ball, it was obvious it was gone. But J.D. Martinez, he looked up to the sky and he thought actually was playing like he was going to be able to catch it. It was pretty funny. Oh, it was very funny, actually. Now, obviously, J.D. Martinez made it interesting. He hit a grand slam. Tanaka did not pitch well. They had the big lead, and they made it interesting. It was 8-6, but he tacked on a couple of runs to make a 10-6 starter. Had a big stolen base and got the third. Was singled in by Stanton, and the Yanks tacked on 1 more run to make a 10-6. The big story was Tyler Austin. Tyler Austin, it started when he was being bunted over very early in the game. I think it was the third and fourth inning. And away dropped out a nice bunt. And, they made a good play, the Red Sox. They threw it. They went for the force at second. And they got him. They got him. He went for the slide. He went for the slide. Got the spike up on Brock Hope. He was a good utility, solid utility guy from the Boston Red Sox. And, obviously playing second with Pedroia out right now. And, I don't think there was anything bad about the slide. I mean, it was just a slide. Yes, the spike was a little off, and he got Holt in a bad spot. And, Holt didn't make any relay anyway. He couldn't make a relay. He was going to double off late. And, Holt said something, to one. There were some words exchanged between Holt and Austin. And, obviously the bench is cleared. It was just words spoken. There was nothing really going on there. I was more focused on the hockey, but I heard about what happened, and Then the bases cleared in the seventh inning. It was 10-6, and Joe Kelly was in. Joe Kelly, he doesn't really have the control to begin with, but I think everybody except Boston knew, you know, they might maybe retaliate. First pitch, one of Kelly's pitches was pretty close, a little too close for comfort there. So Austin had to know what was coming next. And then Kelly intentionally hit him, and Austin just slams his bat in just an awesome show of emotions. He charged Kelly, and everybody came out. And you had Judge, you had Stanton, and those are big guys. And they weren't out there trying to throw. They were actually trying to put peacemaker, which was nice. You know, I don't think the Red Sox wanted to fight those guys, obviously. Brock Holt certainly said it after the game. He said, I thought he was pretty honest and candid. I watched the interviews. Holt said that he didn't think the slide was dirty. It's baseball. He said, you know, yes, you know, you can mention the spike peak up. You know, it was tough. It was just a baseball play. And Austin, you know, just said he didn't think anything he did was dirty. He didn't think, you know, dirty. He plays the game hard. And, you know, sometimes things happen. It's baseball. But I think it's great, you know. Like, it gives this rivalry a little juice. This rivalry has been lacking juice for a long time. You know, last time this rivalry really had juice was in 03 and 04. Obviously, 03 left with the Yankees pulling it out in the ALCS with Aaron Boone as a ball player walking off after that unbelievable eighth inning and that comeback by the Yankees with Jorge Posada getting that unbelievable base hit. That bloop of Pedro will bring you to the left of the man fly out its way. Now, you know, of course, Boone walked off against Wakefield, got home from the Rangers, waffle 0-0 scoreless tie with the Thrashers home opener. But that will always be remembered for Aaron Bleak and Boone. And it was a great moment. In 2004, obviously, the Red Sox got their revenge. They were supposed to get A-Rod, and instead, MLB, the Major League Baseball Players also turned down. And so A-Rod wound up being a Yankee. And because Boone got into ACL, he ripped up his knee, whatever he ripped up, or he ripped up his MCL playing basketball. And so A-Rod wound up being a Yankee. And then that whole year, that's one of the most captivating years that I can think of. And obviously, it was one of the worst seasons, one of the worst years for a Yankee fan. When you think about what happened after what was a great year, where it was Yankees versus Red Sox, everybody knew it was going to be Yankees and Red Sox. And what can you say? I mean, they had 3 games to the lead. They lost 4-1 to the Red Sox. It was just unbelievable fashion. Ortiz playing hero a couple of times at Fenway. And they had the pitching matchups. They had the pitching edge and showing up the play. So I punch more brow, you know, pitching game 7 was just awful for the Yankees. So it is what it is. But that year was so intense between the two teams. Yeah, you had brawls. You had Pedro knocking down Don Zimmer. You had A-Rod. It was real hatred. That, to me, is what Yankees Red Sox is. That's what it epitomizes. So when something like this happens, you know what? I like it. I like it. You know, because I think there should be that. There should be that, you know, intensity, animosity between these two teams. We're going to be battling for the division all year long. So I think it's good. I think it was exactly what the Yankees needed. They needed a little bit of that emotion. They needed to get the belt in you, obviously, but you know, having that little extra edge, I mean, yeah, it makes Thursday's game even more exciting. You know, it's the last game of the series, and it's a chance for the Yankees to finally get back in the win column and get maybe win a series after that awful 4-game series to the Orioles at home, where they lost 3 out of 4, and Friday and Sunday were excruciating fashion. You know, this is good. It's good. It's Yankees, Red Sox, and you know, whatever happens with Thursday, there's going to be they're going to be 15 more times. And so I think it's great. I think it's exactly what you want to see. You know, the Yankees, obviously, they're going to need a little bit better from Tanaka. They're going to need a little bit more length from their starters. And, you know, not having Sabathia, that hurts a little bit. And Boone's going to have to try to not overwork the guys coming out of that pen. So, but I like it. I like it. I mean, I think it's great. The Red Sox are off to a unbelievable start. The best team right now is the Mets. They're 10-1. They have the Majors' best record. And they're terrific right now. It seems like they just can't do any wrong. They swept the Nationals. What a statement that was. Even though Bryce Harper had two home runs in the series. But it was the Mets. The Mets came through and did the job. And they're even getting big hits from Adrian Gonzalez, a veteran who I thought was washed up. He's come out with big hits, hit a grand slam in that series. Cubs up last night after that very talented Marlins reliever who finally got his first start. Gets his first start and he pitches 6 no-hitter innings on 77 pitches, man. He pulls him. And the Marlins are just terrible anyway. He probably should have just kept him in. But he did it, and probably because it was his first start, he had been a reliever mostly. So I kind of understood it from that standpoint. Although I would have liked to have seen him stay in. I don't think he could have finished it. But Gonzalez comes up. He gets a huge pitch hit, 2-run ground double, and the Mets rally to win in the 8th inning. So they continue to win games. They're getting a lot of contributions. Todd Frazier's been a positive impact on that. He's having a little bit of positive impact on the locker room and on and off the field, like he did with the Yankees. He's got some hit hits. He's not going to hit for much of an average, but he's just one of those guys that's a winning ball player, and he just knows how to play the game. So that was a signing I really liked. I really liked Todd Frazier going to the Mets. Gonzalez so far has been positive. He's actually been healthy. So I'll go figure. Obviously it helps that Conforto is finally healthy. Matt Harvey, he pitched very good in the first game. Second game, not so much against Leo Matz, giving up the home run to Harvey. Syndergaard has pitched well. DeGrom, having Syndergaard and DeGrom, having those two healthy really helps the Mets. Oh, the problem to go up 4 runs in there. Win the other day against the Marlins. And Zach Wheeler pitched 7 innings. He went 7 and gave up only 1 run. So for the first time, the Mets actually have their dream rotation with Steven Matz also, and Harvey and Wheeler rounding out that rotation. So, and the bullpen so far has been excellent. And I think you have to give the Mets manager a lot of credit. The guy they brought over from the Indians, that was he turned Gazelman into a reliever. And Gazelman's been dominant in that role. And also turned Seth Lugo into a reliever. So also, he turned a weakness into a strength. So that's really a great move on his part, using guys that, were starters now, by making them, middle relievers. Mickey Callaway, that's the manager I'm thinking of, with the personality. He's actually turning the bullpen into a strength because now they're not just relying on, not just relying on the same guys to try to get the ball, too familiar. You got Ramos, obviously. You got Hands, little Robles. And of course you got Familia. So now it's like he turned it into a strength. And so maybe there is a method to his madness. Seems like he just seems to push the right buttons all the time. So Cespedes has been healthy, and he's hitting so far. He's got 3 home runs. They do have a little bit of an issue with catcher, with Travis Darnold going down. So the catcher spot is worth watching. I don't know what's going to happen with that. And with Darnold suffering the UCL tear, he's going to have Tommy John. When I heard that it was an elbow, I was like, he's done. He's going to be done. So now it's going to fall on Kevin Pollocky, who has started opening day, and Darnell just can't catch a break. He's always been injury prone, and it's a shame, obviously. But the Mets have recalled, double-A catcher Thomas Nido, and he'll back up. So I'm just wondering, can the Mets get by with what they have a catcher, or will they actually maybe try to make a trade for a veteran catcher? They don't have to do anything right away. Plucky is a good defensive catcher. He can handle the staff, and we'll see. I'm sure he'll get the bulk of the starts with Thomas Nido, a guy coming up from Double-A in Birmingham. But, eventually they might decide, we're going to have to go make a trade. We're going to have to make a trade. And they probably will. But they don't have to do anything right away. So, obviously, you never want to lose a player like that. But injuries are part of the sport. Look at all the injuries the Yankees have had already. This is stuff that happened to them last year. Brandon Drury with the headaches that he's had, that's obviously something you worry about. You hope that he can get through that. They have a bunch of guys that are out right now. CC obviously is out. I guess the relatively good news is that they still have most of their pitching staff intact to the New York Yankees. They still have most of their big boppers intact. Aaron Hicks should be coming off the DL soon, which will help that outfield and allow Hicks to go back at the center and give Boone more options. That way, they don't have to make a trade and play a guy that they don't expect to play in the outfield. Wade just came back, so that's going to help also, because he's a guy who can play both infield and outfield. Do have some good options. And Torres right now, he's playing some third base for the Yankees and doing a nice job so far. But as long as the lineup gets better, I'm talking about obviously Giancarlo, and I'm talking about Sanchez because they've struggled so far and seem to be coming out of it finally. If those guys start to pick it up, the Didi performer, Didi's terrific. He's just a terrific ball player. They should be right there. So you have to remember, it's 12 games. It is 12 games is what it is. And it's 162 games. It's a long season. That's what people don't understand about baseball. A little bit longer of a podcast than I was going to do. But, with so much going on with the sports, with the hockey playoffs and the NBA, with Forrest getting fired, and with the Yankees and Red Sox and the Mets playing so well, I figured it was worth it to do this podcast. So thanks for anybody who tuned in. Thank you for tuning in. Obviously, check out any of our shows. Check out Chris Wessel's NHL playoff preview that he did for the program. And make sure you check out some of our future shows. I'm sure we'll try to do tomorrow. I'm going to shoot for maybe a Devils post-wrap. So maybe we'll try to do a Devils post-wrap show. They're a 7 o'clock start against the Lightning. If they do finish in regulation, maybe we could do a 10 o'clock show or maybe 11 o'clock show. So we could do a post-wrap and talk some Devils. Maybe bring Marcel on, bring Rob Davis on. So we'll see. Maybe even Brian Sandler can make an appearance. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks for anybody who tunes in. And have a good rest of your day. Enjoy your Thursday, folks. Bye.